America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. One of the institutions that is in deep trouble in this great nation is the institution of American public schools. It's an obvious problem. Liberals are concerned about it, or at least they say so. Conservatives are certainly concerned about it. Jill Biden, the first lady of the land, who apparently has been discussing the State of the Union address with her husband, preparing him for tonight's big night. She has acknowledged that any nation that out-educates us will out-compete us, which I think is smart and true. So what do we do about American education? We'll be talking about that with Nick Kristof, columnist for the New York Times, who takes a surprisingly even-handed position on what is wrong with what the left says about American education and what is also lacking and often out of focus about what the right says about the state of American education. But first up, there is an indication that President Biden is preparing for the State of the Union by talking to actors who have played the President of the United States successfully. Given the fact that he doesn't want to convey the notion that he is playing a role, that he is another Hollywood star or potential Hollywood star who is pretending to be the president. He really is the President of the United States, and he really is giving what could be the most important speech of his career, of his lifetime so far, giving that speech tonight. It's strange that he led off the State of the Union day with releasing this tape of the president speaking to various actors and actresses who have played presidents on TV and in movies. Biden is asking them for advice. It's sad. About his address. And the voices you'll hear are Morgan Freeman, Michael Douglas, Bill Pullman, Gina Davis, and others. Listen.
I never spoke to so many presidents all at one time. Some of you might know what a big speech like I have to do is coming up to State of the Union. Any advice you have for me in my delivering my speech?
Well, sir, in my capacity as president, all I had to deal with was a meteor. One of the things that I came out of that with in my speech to people, hope. Hope is the strongest force we have in this country. It is the most useful and the most effective. My advice is just keep telling us how you're working for us and building hope.
I know from experience, obviously, what a tough job it is. And, you know, when I was president, it seemed like every week there was some new crisis that I had to face.
You did a hell of a job.
Thank you. I do feel I should just point out one thing. It always bears remembering: there's no crying in politics.
And there's still more. And the conversation continued, along with the cheerful music.
Mr. President, from my experience of being Commander-in-Chief, I learned that having a loving partner changes everything. Love and compassion as a leader are strengths. They're not weaknesses, and are key to your character. So let that shine through in your speech. And don't forget to save a dance the First Lady in the East Room.
We can't be consumed by our petty differences, and we will be united in our common interests. And somehow these words became something to remember. So I had the thought, Mr. President, that, you know, when people look at all that you've managed to do, they're going to remember, time will remember always, the importance of your words when you say that thing about there's nothing that we can't do when we do it together. Those are good ones. Best wishes to you, sir.
There's nothing beyond our capacity. I believe that. Hey, come see me in the White House. I'm very serious. I'd love to meet you all in person. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I never spoke to so many presidents all at one time. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, what exactly was the point here? And all I could recognize, and it comes across very clearly when you just hear the voices, is that all of these former presidents are old, and they sound old, and they make President Biden seem like a youngster, asking people who are even more advanced in age than he is. I'm not sure this is the right way that he can deal with the age issue, but I would imagine that we will see a very enthusiastic Biden tonight. If President Trump had tried the same thing, he could probably get John Voight to come on with him. But it's tough to think of the other superstars. And again, nothing quite says reaching out to Americans in the middle of the country quite like highlighting Hollywood elites in giving presidential advice for the State of the Union. The Jimmy Fallon, speaking of Hollywood,
President Biden will deliver his State of the Union address. Biden's been practicing for weeks, not his speech, staying up past 9 o'clock. He'll do it. The average time of Biden's State of the Union is about 1 hour and 6 minutes. However, the feels-like time is closer to 4 hours. Biden's speech will be broadcast on all of the major networks like NBC, CBS, and ABC, which means the big winner tomorrow will be Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon.
Time for Medved's Entertainment Minute.
An army brat stationed with her family in Germany during the 1950s gets to meet the most famous entertainer in the world in the new film biography, Priscilla.
What's your name?
Priscilla Boyer.
You like Elvis Presley?
Who doesn't?
Why my daughter?
Well, sir, I happen to be very fond of your daughter. Are you going to be here or not?
I want a life of my own.
Well, in this great-looking and moving film from writer-director Sofia Coppola, Priscilla Presley gets to upstage her husband Elvis for the only time in her life. The celebrity bride is played by a dynamic and extraordinary actress named Kaylee Spaney. Unlike other films about Elvis, there's no vision of Jacob Elordi impersonating the superstar as he entertains adoring crowds. Instead, their sympathetic focus on his deeply troubled and dysfunctional personal life. It's rated R for rough language, some graphic sexuality, and yes, drug use. 3 stars for the disturbing and memorable.
Receive 50% off by becoming a MedHead member.
This is ridiculous.
Join now at michaelmedved.com.
It doesn't make sense.
Receive 50% off by becoming a MedHead member.
On the Michael Medved Show, very pleased to welcome back to the show Nicholas Kristof, who is the acclaimed prize-winning opinion columnist for the New York Times, who writes about foreign and domestic issues. We frequently disagree, but then again, every once in a while, there's a point that Nicholas Kristof makes that it seems to me is important for all Americans to hear. people of left-wing and right-wing points of view, it doesn't matter. A pro-American point of view is what is concerning here. And that's true about his most recent piece on education. The headline in the New York Times, "The school issues we're battling over aren't the ones that matter." And he's critical about both liberals and conservatives in missing the real focus of what we should be talking about concerning our education system. Congratulations on the piece, Nick. And what's a good example of both people on the left and people on the right getting the focus wrong when it comes to education?
Well, I mean, on the left, the catastrophic failure of the left, especially on the West Coast, was the prolonged school closures. And I don't think that the left has fully acknowledged the degree to which it set kids back by that.
During the pandemic, of course.
During the pandemic, yeah. I mean, the schools were closed much longer than they needed to be. And, you know, look, upper middle class kids managed to figure out workarounds. But if you're a working class kid without internet at home, without parents who were really pushing you to make sure you kept up, then you had a huge setback. And, you know, by some accounts, 1 million extra kids dropped out as a result. And so, you know, that was, I think on the left, that was an enormous failing. You know, and on the right, I just see all these efforts to censor books, to complain about woke teachers. I mean, I have a sort of funny example in my piece of a school in Florida that censored a book and painted over a goblin's bear behind. And, you know, I just think what both sides need to be focused on is actually getting kids to read and to do math. And goblins, behinds, and pandemic closures just get in the way of that.
Well, you also talk about the San Francisco Board of Education and their crazy obsession with renaming schools, taking the late Dianne Feinstein's name off a school because she had once time when she was in city government had allowed a display of a Confederate flag. Okay, speaking about what works, you also mention the fact that sometimes there is educational success in red states and in blue states. And you talk about Massachusetts and New Jersey as blue states that have been very successful, and Florida and Utah as red states, very red states that have been very successful. What's the key element here?
So it's actually less funding than one might think. I mean, funding matters, but that isn't as important. It's really, I think, a focus in the early grades on making sure that kids get on track and on fighting to keep kids in from dropping out of high school. You know, if you drop out in this century, you were just cooked. Your children are cooked. And, you know, Mississippi, I think, is a fascinating example of a state that has dramatically improved its K-12 results. It did that partly by amplifying pre-K, but mostly by this all-out drive from kindergarten through third grade in getting every kid to read, including a third-grade test that the kids need to pass in reading to go on. And, you know, Mississippi is still a mess. It has not solved racism. It has not solved poverty. But it has figured out how to get kids to read. And if Mississippi can do that, then, you know, no other state has an excuse.
Mississippi, one area of success. There actually was another suggestion that President Biden is speaking tonight at the State of the Union address. He probably should mention education at one point. What could he say that could actually unite the country and maybe build support for meaningful educational reform?
So, I mean, I think that this notion of actually buckling down and getting kids to be able to read and do math and to acknowledge that I think if you want to understand why the U.S. became the most important economy in the world, it's because we did mass education really well beginning in the 19th century. And Britain and Germany had elite education that was better than ours, but we did mass education better. We were the first country to have high schools that were very widely attended, first country to have colleges that were widely attended. And then since about 1970, we've let other countries surpass us, especially in East Asia. I think that if he were to acknowledge that, I mean, he sometimes has quoted Jill Biden as something along the line of that when that if we let countries out-educate us, they'll out-compete us. I'm mangling it a little bit, but, you know, I think that's exactly right. And so I wish we would see this also as a national security requirement to get kids reading, and we're even worse at math than we are in reading, frankly.
And one of the things that has been shocking, has gotten a little bit of attention recently, is the amount of absenteeism. And which is another big problem. You, of course, even in rural Oregon, attended school regularly. We're all going to find out more about this in your forthcoming book, your memoir, Chasing Hope, that's out in May. What is the main theme you would take from Chasing Hope, your new book, a main theme regarding education?
So it is that theme of hope. And I think right now, you know, the whole country is so dispirited and our problems seem so vast. And, you know, and they are. There are a lot of things going wrong. But I try to make the argument that we historically have figured out how to solve problems, and that now, compared to 20 years ago, we better understand the toolkit that we need to solve these problems. And, you know, education is a great example. We used to just have arguments back and forth about what would work. Now we have randomized controlled trials. We have good evidence about the importance of early childhood interventions, for example. And so I think I think we have real problems, but we can lick them. And that's one of the reasons to write that Chasing Hope, to try to give people a sense of the path forward and to remind us that, you know, we have solved bigger problems and we can solve them again.
It's coming out in May, the new memoir, and we need some inspiration, there's no doubt, in this country, in the midst of this dour and dire presidential campaign. Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times, and watch for Chasing Hope, released in May. We will be right back.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
On the Michael Medved Show, as the entire world awaits the State of the Union address, and again, I think that there will be a number of partisan Republicans who are watching President Biden looking for that moment of forgetfulness or slurred speech or some kind of non sequitur that is ad-libbed. Who knows? But I do think people should remember last time he spoke, when we acknowledged at the time and on the air that it was unexpectedly effective. And the jeering from some of the Republicans in the audience, particularly Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene, their jeering allowed Biden to look good and on in command. And today we have a contribution that amounts to a tweet of the day. It's actually a Truth Social of the day, which we honor here.
Turn the page now to the internet. I mean, wow, what a great, smart tweet.
Change his password so he no longer has access to his Twitter feed.
Did you send the tweet?
I did not send that tweet. My system was hacked. I was pranked.
Donald Trump hasn't tweeted at us once, and I'm starting to get worried about him.
So we have a new tweet.
All right.
Can I do the honors?
Stand by. Tweet alert.
And this from a Rep. MTG, that's Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. And she says very simply, what have Democrats talked about since January 6th? January 6th. It's all they have. Which is fascinating because it seems to me that there's another party, it's not the Democratic Party, that talks a lot about the key issue behind January 6th, the fact that the election was allegedly stolen, it was rigged, it was dishonest, that Joe Biden is not the legitimate president of the United States, that he's an imposter and somebody who's inserted himself into this position of power through cheating. That's a major theme. It's a major theme by President Trump and by others. Oh, yes, including Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. The fact that Democrats, even when it comes to the legal actions against President Trump, the upcoming legal action, the one that's going to be starting soon and in just a couple of weeks, is... has nothing to do with January 6th because it has to do with events and payoffs that were made to Stormy Daniels and others made before the contested election or the stolen election, depending on how you look at it. Van Jones on CNN, former aide, if you'll recall, to President Obama. He was an aide on environmental issues to President Obama, served there and has since been a major figure in the media. He was on CNN talking about Biden's upcoming State of the Union address. Listen.
I think hopefully tomorrow night Biden points out if you are supporting, you know, someone like Nikki Haley, get on this train, because if you don't, you're going to wake up someday next year and you're going to cut on TV and you're going to see Russian tanks rushing through Europe. And now we're not going to be able to send money. We've got to send our actual soldiers over there to defend our allies because, you know, the American people won't stand for that. This is a very serious moment on the economy. I think Biden has to be proud that gas prices are down, the stock market is up, unemployment is down, student loans have been cut, but food prices are too high and rent is too high. And he can do something about that by going after these corporate chains that are ripping people off. He's got a task force for that, and then pushing on the Fed to cut interest rates. But he's got to be a fighter when it comes to the American pocketbook issues and a stand for American democracy abroad.
A stand for American democracy abroad will be, it seems to me, by all indications, an important message that will be communicated tonight. The difficulty for President Biden is whatever he chooses to talk about. Obviously, the issue of immigration is going to be on top of mind for American voters as they are listening to the State of the Union address. Joe Manchin, who is a fellow Democrat and serving out his Senate term as a Democrat, he's the same party as Joe Biden, but he speaks fairly harshly about his involvement with the immigration issue. Speaking to Chris Cuomo on News Nation, this is Senator Manchin.
The border today, Chris, I think in my lifetime is one of the most dangerous things we've ever faced. It has the ability to brew into something that we can't even imagine. Because we don't know where an awful lot of these people are, what their intentions of coming here for. We weren't able to adjudicate them or vet them. And that's what's got to stop. And, you know, Joe Biden owns it. He has to say he made a horrible mistake. He can say, and I think I've heard this, for humanitarian and humane reasons. After the COVID, he tried to help people around the world that were displaced and upheaved and thought that he could give them some respite. Well, guess what? I don't think he ever intended that we'd ever get overrun. They've waited too long to react. The president today is trying to fix what he knows is wrong. He's willing to fix it. He's agreed with James Lankford, who I think is one of the most honorable people you'll ever want to be around and work with. And a piece of legislation I think would be tremendous for our country.
Okay, he's talking about the legislation that was introduced and that was negotiated by Senator Lankford, conservative Republican from Oklahoma. And the legislation was then shot down by Republicans in the House, rather, where the Republicans control with that slight razor-thin majority. Meanwhile, there is another surprising headline that appeared in the San Francisco Press. Progressivism is out. What does that mean? It means that one of the little-known developments in recent election involves San Francisco voters who have grown tired of crime, homelessness, and drug use plaguing their left-wing city, overwhelmingly approved a pair of ballot measures on Tuesday that will expand police powers and require welfare recipients to be screened for drugs. Proposition E authorizes police to use surveillance equipment, cameras, drones, and even facial recognition technology without prior permission from an oversight body. It passed with 59% of the vote, 59.9% of the vote, almost 60%. And there was another proposition. Proposition F mandated that anyone receiving public assistance benefits be screened for a substance abuse disorder. That passed with 63%. Progressivism is out for now, the San Francisco Chronicle website read in bold letters on Wednesday morning after the election. The approval of both propositions was a big win for the embattled mayor, London Breed, who placed both measures on the primary ballot in an effort to tamp down on crime and to take aim at drug addiction and overdose deaths in the city. She told reporters on Tuesday that passage of the two measures will allow her administration to continue the work we're doing to improve public safety. We will be right back for more on maybe some encouraging developments behind the scenes like those. We'll be right back.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
On the Michael Medved show, we were talking about the ongoing moves in San Francisco, moves that are politically incorrect. The governor, the mayor of San Francisco, London Breed, has actually, I mean, no one would describe her as a conservative, but I guess in San Francisco terms, she is. She's somebody who takes seriously the problem of clearing up homeless encampments and a better law enforcement, which is desperately needed in San Francisco. And that's why they overwhelmingly passed in the city by the Golden Gate these two initiatives, that both of which were meant to crack down on drug use, and the other one to give police more leeway in doing their job. Mayor London Breed of San Francisco said this about actually curbing addiction and homelessness. This is clip 13.
Talking about the four programs that we invested money in, but before I was mayor, There wasn't a dollar going the positive direction equal change from the city and county of San Francisco Public Health Department. They weren't doing what they should have done to invest in the various solutions in order to make sure that treatment is easier to get than access to drugs. And I am unapologetic in my investments in making sure that we have outpatient support, making sure that we have on-demand resources for those who are asking for treatment, that we are making it easier to help people than to harm people. Because you know what? Harm reduction, from my perspective, is not reducing the harm.
This is San Francisco, believe it or not.
This is San Francisco, believe it or not, talking about problems like homelessness and drug addiction. There is more about the state of Oregon, which is making history by completely going back on their legalization, decriminalization of drug use, with including all kinds of dangerous drugs that kill people. And with all of that going on, it's also reassuring to find someone from the world of sports and mass media who has a strong following of his own, the one and only Charles Barkley. He was on his own CNN show with Gail King. And he talked a little bit about black people wearing Trump mugshot merch. Listen, this is clip five.
Obviously, I'm not gonna go around punching random strangers in the face, first and foremost. Secondly, people can vote for who they want to. People can vote for who they want to. The point I was trying to make.
There you go.
Well, no, the point I was making. I wasn't trying to make it.
Okay.
When Donald Trump compares his plight with that of the black person, that is what I had a problem with. Mm-hmm. Now, I do want to say this. I want to make it perfectly clear. If you're wearing a black, if you're a black person and you're wearing a Donald Trump mugshot, you are a freaking idiot. And I'm only saying freaking idiot because they won't let me say what I really want to say. But you can figure it out. It starts with an F. Mm-hmm. But you are. Listen, people can vote for who they want to.
Yes.
But for him to compare his plight with that other African, I don't even like that term, the black people in America is asinine and stupid. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you guys can put on those two small T-shirts like y'all got them on. Get a big size if you're going to wear it. Don't put on a medium and act like you got muscles. But that is so, it just, that bothered
that
me.
That irritates.
Okay, and then he also sent a clear message, did Charles Barkley, not only to people who wear Donald Trump mugshot merch. He talked about a clear and necessary message for President Biden and the Democrats. Listen.
The reason, and I'm only speaking for myself. The reason I think the Democratic Party and Mr. Biden, President Biden, is losing black votes is they only care about black people every 4 years. Mm-hmm. They come into our neighborhoods and say, we're going to make stuff better. We're going to do this, do this, do this. And then finally, us black people are like, yo, man, other than my ability to dunk a basketball, all my neighborhoods are still the same. Our schools are still the same. And that's why I think black people are leaving disappointed in the Democratic Party, because I ain't gonna lie, I voted Democratic every time just because I thought it was gonna help black people and poor people. Because black people and poor white people, they're in the same boat. And like, I didn't care who the president was, I'm not gonna lie, but I only voted Republican one time in my life, and that was for John Kasich, and I didn't even know he couldn't win. But then I'm starting to look like, man, I understand why black people are leaving, want to vote for somebody else, because every 4 years they come into our neighborhood and say, man, we're going to make things better for you.
And that doesn't entirely happen. There is one black candidate who has generated a great deal of controversy. He's Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina. He is now the Republican nominee for governor. He won that nomination and won it handily in North Carolina. And it's considered a very close race because Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson is dynamic. He also has a tendency to say things that are somewhat controversial. For instance, he recently made a statement suggesting that it was we should go back to a time when women did not have the right to vote. There was a newly discovered video from a March 2020 event hosted by the Republican Women of Pitt County, where the lieutenant governor invoked a bizarre hypothetical in which he said he'd absolutely like to return to the days when the 19th Amendment didn't exist and women didn't have the right to vote. But Donald Trump enthusiastically endorsed Lieutenant Governor Robinson. Listen, clip one.
Mark Robinson. I heard him, and by the way, his wife is much, much more lovely than he is. I can tell you that. And she's my friend. Thank you, darling, for being here. But, you know, I heard him coming in on the plane. I was listening, and I said to the people on the plane, watch this. This is Martin Luther King on steroids. Okay, now.
Okay. He has also, they make a list of some of his controversial statements. I can add one where he said that the Holocaust was hogwash and it wasn't possible that 6 million people were actually killed by Hitler. And he also said that the four horsemen of the apocalypse included the Chinese, the CIA, the Muslims, and Jewish bankers. In any event, he is also Governor Robinson, Lieutenant Governor Robinson, wants to be the governor. He has said on various occasions, he has talked about the scourge of homosexuality, calling that filth, saying that abortion is a scourge that needs to be run out of this land, mocking the school shooting survivors at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, saying that so many freedoms were lost during the civil rights movement, calling the January 6th insurrection a minor thing, and calling the transgender movement demonic. Then there's James Carville speaking about Lieutenant Governor Robinson and his campaign. This is clip three.
You know, they always ask us about some of the more left-wing people in the Democratic Party who actually are not for anything that they stuff that I think would call kind of impractical but idealistic. They got to put the microphone in every Republican's face. You know, would you vote for this guy? What do you have to say about it? These are some things that are nominated for a major state, a gubernatorial candidate mm-hmm. endorsed by your presidential candidate. Do you back Trump? You have to back people in the corner. And we pay way more for some naive people in our party. That guy is not naive. He's evil. I mean, what he said, that's not somebody being naive. That's insane.
Well, we will see how it plays out. He actually, I think, it's favored to be a very close race. And in fact, North Carolina is a crucial swing state. Trump won it both times, but very narrow margins. And let us see what happens in this ongoing campaign on State of the Union the day before. Coming up in this greatest nation on God's green earth.